Do you want more true crime bedtime stories? Sign up to Bonus Bedtime Stories on Apple Podcasts today to access early and ad-free episodes. Subscribers will also get an exclusive bonus episode each month. But for now, get comfortable and enjoy tonight's episode.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to True Crime Bedtime Stories. Tonight we delve into the mysterious case of 20-year-old newlywed Ginger Rios. Her baffling disappearance from a Las Vegas strip mall sent ripples through her loved ones and the local community. In a story that takes us behind the deceptive calm of suburbia, we'll follow the twists and turns of an investigation filled with startling revelations and confront the darkest side of human nature. Stay with me as we unravel this disturbing case step by step and discover the unnerving details that emerged as the truth behind Ginger's vanishing becomes clear. The afternoon sun streamed down on the bustling strip mall of Las Vegas as 20-year-old Ginger Rios, a newlywed with the glow of happiness still fresh on her face, stepped into a well-known shop, seeking a book she hoped would help her and her husband, Mark, secure their future. The clock neared 4 p.m., a time and day that would become etched in the mind of her other half. Minutes trickled by, turning into nervous anticipation for Mark as Ginger did not reappear. What started as a typical afternoon of errands took a concerning turn. Mark entered the store in search of his wife. Inside, a couple behind the counter met him with the unsettling news that Ginger had already purchased her book and left. Despite sensing something was amiss in their tone, Mark thanked them and continued the search for his wife. As his eyes scanned the familiar storefronts, his concern bloomed into anxiety. Mark approached neighboring businesses with a single repeated question, "Have you seen a striking brunette passing through?" Each negative answer only fueled the growing fear within him. Not knowing where else to turn, Mark placed a fateful call to his father-in-law, George, telling him of the unfathomable. Ginger seemed to have vanished into thin air. George, a pragmatic man, advised a return to the starting point, the store spycraft where this web of confusion began. Determined to find something that would point to Ginger's whereabouts on the security cameras, they made the disheartening discovery that the store had abruptly closed. As Mark and George retreated from the inconclusive scene, a chance sighting of the store's couple breaching the gap between them and a white van stirred a glimmer of hope. Mark reached out, sharing the direness of his situation with them. The couple with a child in tow cited prior commitments, but the man, calling himself John Flowers and owner of the shop, promised a viewing of the footage on the following Monday. Clinging to that promised glimpse of answers, Mark and George thanked them and continued the search for Ginger, unaware of the dead-end journey they had embarked on. This dead-end at spycraft was just the beginning of a search that would stretch on far longer than either man could have anticipated. A search permeated with the kind of suspense that wraps around your spine, threatening to never let go. They had no choice but to retreat for the moment, their unanswered questions hanging in the desert air as heavy as their hearts. The search for Ginger was not over. It was just beginning. The ticking of the clock was a harsh reminder for Mark. Each second that passed amplified his worry into full-blown desperation. The hours after Ginger's disappearance turned to a blur of restless anxiety. He replayed her last words over and over in his head. "I'll be right back," she had said with a smile. Those words, meant to be reassuring, now echoed in the emptiness of her absence. With Sunday morning came the sobering light of day, and an unsettling realization took hold. Ginger was gone, and there were no clues to her whereabouts. With a heart heavy with dread, Mark approached the Las Vegas police. He filed a missing person report, formally putting into words the nightmare that his wife had vanished. The response from the police was swift. They, too, saw the gaping holes in the story presented by John Flowers, the owner of Spycraft, the last place Ginger was known to have been. Their investigation began, casting an immediate shadow of doubt on Flowers' tale of Ginger's uneventful departure from his store. Detectives scrutinized Flowers' version of events, raising their eyebrows at the claim that Ginger had left just a few moments after stepping inside, a story that failed to align with Mark's unwavering gaze on the store's entrance. Was it truly possible for Ginger to walk out unnoticed, or was Flowers' narrative a poorly woven fabric of deceit? The officer's beam of suspicion pointed towards Flowers. His reluctance to aid in the initial hours of Ginger's disappearance, the conveniently taped-over security footage, and his general lack of cooperation scratched at the police's instincts. It was clear that something was amiss, and with every question left unanswered by Flowers, the urgency to uncover the truth only intensified. For Mark, the fading of hope was not an option. Encircled by the walls of uncertainty, he clung to the memories of Ginger, vibrant and full of life, as he braced himself for the days ahead, not knowing that they were only at the dark beginning of what would turn into an even darker journey. As the Las Vegas sun set, painting the streets in hues of orange and crimson, the undertones of something sinister loomed in the air. Detectives pushed open the door to Spycraft, the store now drowning in the caustic scent of bleach. It was an odor that filled every corner, sharp and blinding, almost as if it was trying to erase a story that had unfolded within these walls. A story that held the answers to Ginger Rio's mystifying disappearance. Amidst the shelves lined with spy cameras, lockpick kits, and gadgets stripping store security tags, law enforcement's scrutiny tightened. These items weren't inherently nefarious, but their presence nudged the needle of moral compasses towards the darker ends of legality. Yet it wasn't the merchandise that solidified the officer's growing disquiet. It was a small, seemingly inconsequential stain on the storeroom wall. The stain, a dried reddish blotch, almost too small to assert its significance, practically whispered for attention. It was like one of those blink-and-you'll-miss-it details in a suspense novel that turns out to be the linchpin for the entire plot. Detectives scraped off what little they could, bearing in mind that this minuscule mark could potentially unveil the horror of what had befallen Ginger. And then there was John Flowers, the proprietor, whose every word seemed to add another layer of doubt rather than clarity. Flowers recounted Ginger's last purchases with a remembrance that seemed all too convenient. He spoke of her buying two books, one on adopting a new identity and the other a grim guide to contract killings. This information didn't just raise eyebrows. It sent alarm bells clanging through the minds of those searching for truth. To think that Ginger, who Mark was under the impression had merely sought a book on improving credit scores, would leave with literature so vastly out of character, cast a suspicious shadow that loomed large and unsettling. Flowers' narrative cracked under the strain of his own contradictions, from the missing receipt to the absence of CCTV footage from that fateful day. It was as if the tape, supposedly wiped clean by Flowers himself, was a metaphor for what he wished to erase from reality. With no hard evidence at hand, and only a tapestry of questionable tales, and a cleaning frenzy that did little to dispel the ominous atmosphere, the detectives were left to ponder. In the grand puzzle of Ginger Rios's disappearance, every piece mattered. Every dissonance in Flowers' story, every alarming item in the spycraft collection, and that tiny telling stain, all were seeping into the foundation of suspicion that was now firmly laid beneath spycraft's door. In the thick of confusion and concern, the glaring specter of suspicion began to cast its shadow over Ginger's husband, Mark. The insidious whisper of doubt that so often accompanies these tragic tales started to tug at the edges of the police narrative. It's an unfortunate truism in these investigations. The spouse often becomes the initial focus. Detectives combed through the nooks and crannies of Mark's life, his routines, his whereabouts, his interactions. And then they unearthed something. It was a bizarre incident involving Mark's car, discovered abandoned and smoldering in a residential area. While most of us might call for a tow truck at the first sign of engine trouble, Mark's decision to abandon the vehicle seemed to the police as perplexing as it was suspicious. They imagined that perhaps he was attempting to incinerate any latent evidence, any strands of truth that might connect him to a misdeed. Confronted with this enigma, Mark's explanation was as banal as it was hard to fathom. He claimed the car had simply overheated. Opting against roadside assistance, he left it and decided to walk home. It was not the kind of narrative that soothes the furrowed brows of inquisitive detectives. In yet another twist in this unfolding tale, when the vehicle was subjected to a meticulous forensic examination, as though combing through the pages of Mark's last few days for a glimmer of malevolence, nothing was found. No traces of wrongdoing, no hints of a crime committed. It was as if the car, much like the missing Ginger, held its secrets tight to its metal chest. The lens of suspicion that had so keenly focused on Mark now began to widen, almost reluctantly. His version of events, his innocence, remained intact, undisturbed by the hands of the law. The mystery deepened, the plot thickened, and the search for Ginger Rios continued unabated.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Mark, it turned out, was not the culprit in this story of vanishing and woe. Ginger Rios wasn't just any 20-year-old. She was a vibrant beacon of light on the Las Vegas casino circuit, her voice and footwork gracing the stages as a member of the Salsa Machine Group. With aspirations that soared high above the glitzy marquees, Ginger had dreams of making it big on her own, and she was on her way, paving her path to stardom, one electrifying performance at a time, while on stage her spirit as infectious as her talent. Offstage, Ginger was a freshly minted newlywed, immersed in the glow of a life she was building with Mark, her husband. They had plans like so many young couples, the kind that included rent-to-own properties and polishing credit scores to dazzle sellers. It was the groundwork of a future filled with promise, an American dream they were chasing together. But amidst her disappearance, this portrait of a young woman full of life and ambition exerted a different kind of pull on those who knew her and loved her. To them, the notion that Mark could harm Ginger, the wife he adored, was ludicrous. They remembered how he had looked at Ginger with eyes reflecting nothing but pure adoration. To Ginger's friends and family, it was inconceivable that their love, no matter how nascent, with its attendant ups and downs, could breed such a grim outcome. Mark and Ginger had just settled into a new home, a tangible testament to their shared dreams, the day before she vanished. This wasn't a couple teetering on the edge. They were just beginning. The troubling developments in the investigation, the leap to investigate Mark, all seemed discordant with the day-to-day life Ginger and Mark had led. As the search for leads continued, those closest to Ginger clung not only to hope, but to a firm belief in Mark's innocence and the life that they all knew Ginger wouldn't willingly leave behind. Hunters in the vast expanse of the Arizona desert stumbled upon a discovery that would cast a long, ominous shadow over the sunny skies of Las Vegas. It was a body, abandoned to the elements and the isolation of the wilderness. What stood out, even amid the desolation, were two rings on the victim's fingers. One was adorned with three small gemstones, and the other bore an emblem that could either represent the letter W or M. This clue, seemingly insignificant in the grand scale of the desert, forged a link back to Ginger Rios. Ginger, whose absence had carved a void into the lives of her loved ones, had worn no such rings. This left everyone grappling with more questions than answers. Whose body was this, and what did her death signify in the tapestry of dread unfolding in Ginger's disappearance? As investigators processed the scene, the power of these small, enigmatic tokens became apparent. Authorities released images of the jewelry to the press, hoping that recognition might peel back the layers of the unknown woman's identity. Despite this concerted effort, the vital pieces of the puzzle remained elusive, and it seemed that both cases were destined to fade into the cold case files. The discovery in the desert pulled the investigation into a chilling new direction. It added an ominous weight to the fear that gripped those involved, Ginger's family, the police, and the public following the case, an increasing suspicion that the case of Ginger Rios was part of something darker than anyone had dared to imagine. It forced everyone to consider the unthinkable. Ginger was not merely missing. She may have met a fate as tragic and brutal as the victim found discarded, like forgotten refuse in the barren Arizona desert. The investigation into Ginger Rios's disappearance was at a standstill until one seemingly ordinary day reshaped everything we thought we knew about the case. The turning point occurred when a federal agent placed a call to the Las Vegas detectives. This wasn't just a routine update, though. It was the start of a revelation that would crack the case wide open. John Flowers, the man who stood behind the counter at Spycraft and brushed off Ginger's worried husband, wasn't who he claimed to be. He was, in fact, Craig Leslie Jacobson, a fugitive with a history of slipping through the cracks of law enforcement, hiding in plain sight in Las Vegas. But Jacobson's web of lies was about to come undone, thanks to one person, his wife Cheryl. The police listened intently as Cheryl began to unravel the horrifying story of what happened to Ginger in the back room of Spycraft. It began just like any other day, with Cheryl and John at the store's front when Ginger entered. Cheryl was soon sent away on an errand to fetch film, For her, it was just another task in her role as her husband's helper. But when she returned, Ginger was nowhere to be found, and Mark was already there, frantic, inquiring about his wife. Cheryl stood in silence as John wove a false narrative, claiming Ginger had left the premises. The truth was locked away in her silence until that call with the detective. She revealed her husband's jittery behavior post Mark's visit and his chilling confession to her. "I did something terrible." Cheryl's curiosity led her to the storeroom, where she faced a grisly scene, one that would haunt her for years to come. The lifeless body of Ginger lay on the floor, her life brutally taken. The memory of John's hands clasping tightly around her throat coerced Cheryl into secrecy. She recalled the fear, not just for herself, but for their baby, as John threatened her into submission. Ensuing events were a haze of deceit as she recalled watching John meticulously clean the storeroom and dispose of Ginger's body, wrapping it in plastic as he prepared to remove every trace of his heinous act from spycraft. In a tragic twist, Mark and George almost stumbled upon the truth when they returned, seeking any information on Ginger. Unbeknownst to them, her body was in the back of the van, driven by the very couple they were pleading with for help. Cheryl's revelation to the detectives wasn't selfless. She sought a trade, full immunity for the information leading to Ginger's whereabouts. The detectives, with heavy hearts but few options, agreed, knowing that without Cheryl, the final chapter in Ginger's story may never be revealed. Her detail-rich memory led them to a concrete tomb in the Arizona desert, a grim resting place chosen by Jacobson for his innocent victim. Cheryl's confession peeled back the layers of deceit at spycraft and the malevolence hidden beneath John Flowers' veneer. And yet, her account left us grappling with the disturbing knowledge that cruelty and fear resided alongside mundane items on the shelves of that unassuming store. It was a stark reminder that sometimes the ordinary facade conceals the darkest of truths. Jacobson had an array of assumed names, evident from the myriad of aliases that he used to obscure his true identity, one marked by previous incarcerations for burglary and counterfeiting. It wasn't just his past that was shadowed in wrongdoing. The hands of Jacobson were stained with more than just counterfeit ink. They were bloodied with the life of Ginger Rios, and, as it turned out, she may not have been his only victim. The law enforcement's net began to widen as they traced the tremors of Jacobson's violence. The investigation revealed Jacobson's stint in a psychiatric facility, where he was diagnosed with a medley of disorders. His claims of wrestling with schizophrenia appeared to add a layer of complexity to his already intricate psychological tapestry. Despite this, skeptics questioned his candor, pondering whether it was simply another play in his book of deceit. Prosecutors, dubious of the true depth of Jacobson's mental afflictions, offered him a deal, an admission of guilt for the murder of Ginger Rios, with the faint hope of parole in 25 years. Amidst the judicial back and forth, piercing testimonies surfaced. A chilling account from McLaughlin, a former employee, shed light on a peculiar task assigned by Jacobson, photographing dark-haired female employees of the casinos. With each new revelation, such as finding women's wedding bands in strange places, the portrait of Jacobson became increasingly sinister. McLaughlin even remembered Jacobson's cryptic brags about burying bodies in the desert, dubbing it a government graveyard. But the monstrous reach of Jacobson's crimes didn't stop there. Authorities linked him to another potential victim after a body was discovered in the Arizona desert. First referred to as Jane Doe, her case connected to Jacobson's M.O., and soon enough, the pieces began to fit together all too perfectly. When a girl named Christina Martinez, last seen across from Spycraft's Phoenix store and brought into the bleak mosaic Jacobson had crafted, the authorities scrambled to find a thread amongst the cold cases. Those distinctive rings found with the Jane Doe, they belonged to Christina, inscribed with an M for Martinez. Christina's identity was eventually confirmed, giving her a name and a history instead of the anonymity of a Jane Doe. As Jacobson's web of crimes unwrapped, showing just how deep and dark the rabbit hole went, the legal system braced itself for the complexities of prosecuting a man who slipped into many roles so easily, the magical merchant, the caring family man, and the delusional patient. But beneath those, many masks remained one irrefutable identity, Craig Leslie Jacobson, the monster responsible for shattering countless lives and leaving a trail of unanswered questions and broken families. The twisted tale of Craig Leslie Jacobson, once known in Las Vegas as John Flowers, took an even darker turn as he deftly navigated the legal labyrinth to avoid facing his day in trial. After his chilling confession and subsequent arrest for the murder of Ginger Rios, Jacobson's ability to manipulate his circumstances seemed almost as diabolical as his crimes. With the precision of someone who had made a life out of deceit, Jacobson leveraged his understanding of legal loopholes and psychiatric evaluations, time and again deflecting the possibility of a trial and punishment. Pleading guilty to murder, he struck a deal that might allow him parole in 25 years, a disturbingly lenient possibility for such a gruesome crime. Later, his plea morphed into one of insanity, as if to suggest that his deadly actions were beyond his own control. Was Jacobson as ill as his defense made him out to be, or was he playing a high-stakes game to escape the consequences of his actions? Authorities were now faced not just with one confirmed killing, but with the daunting specter that Jacobson's crimes spanned further than they could see. Before long, the DNA brought a match, confirming that Christina Martinez was the unknown victim, adding a somber chapter to Jacobson's tale and intensifying the urgency to finally bring justice for the lives he had ended so cruelly. The twisted dance continued into the courts as Jacobson's competency to stand trial came into question. Was this another instance of his cunning masquerade, a way to prolong his time outside a prison's walls, or was it a genuine descent into mental incapacity? One by one, the days of judicial reckoning were postponed, and the inexorable hands of the clock continued their sweep. The cases of Ginger Rios and Christina Martinez, both their lives tragically cut short by a man who once sold surveillance gadgets to a suspicious clientele, remained caught in a web of legal delays and contentious debates over the true state of Jacobson's mind. The story of Craig Leslie Jacobson, a man who preyed upon unsuspecting women, is one that is marked by cold calculation both in his crimes and his approach to the justice system, leaving behind a trail of heartbreak and an ever-unfolding mystery as to the full extent of his dark deeds. As we piece together the shattered fragments of this nightmarish puzzle, we find ourselves examining the twisted psychological profile of Craig Leslie Jacobson, the man behind the facade of John Flowers, the seemingly unassuming store owner. It's in the depths of Jacobson's mind that we catch a glimpse of the insidious obsessions that fueled his predatory behaviors. His fixation on women who bore a striking resemblance to Mary Stoddard, a figure from his past, is an unsettling reminder that sometimes the obsessions of serial killers can target a specific type. This echoes the behaviors of other infamous predators, like Ted Bundy, who also hunted victims that reminded him of a woman from his own history. Understanding this fixation sharpens the horrifying concept that for Jacobson, spycraft was not just a business, but a hunting ground. Lurking behind every guide and gadget was a calculating mind, one that viewed each customer not as a patron, but potentially as prey. And for those who fit his desired profile, they didn't just walk into a store, they unwittingly stepped into a trap. Such a reality shatters any sense of normalcy we assign to daily interactions and mundane places. The notion that the simple act of shopping can turn into a deadly encounter is a bone-chilling thought. Ginger Rios stepped into spycraft, hoping to find a book to better her life, but was met with a tragic end at the hands of a merciless predator. Her vibrant spirit and dreams were cut short, yet her story remains a powerful reminder of the unexpected dangers that can lurk in the most ordinary places. The determination to bring her full justice continues, a testament to the lasting impact of her life and the loved ones she left behind. For more about this and all of our episodes, check out our True Crime Bedtime Stories Instagram and TikTok accounts. Join us next time for True Crime Bedtime Stories. Until then, sleep tight.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.